Message and data rates may apply. Consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
Tell me about Buddy. How did he come into your life?
My daughter gave him to me. We had gone to a relative's house and they had a golden retriever and I was petting the dog. And I had one when I was a little kid. When I was about 10, I had a golden retriever for 10 years. And I just said something like, reminds me of my childhood or something. And about 6 months later, my daughter showed up with this golden retriever pup. She said she bought him in Idaho for $50.
$50 for a golden retriever?
Yeah.
That's real cheap.
Brian and Buddy became attached at the hip, even when Brian was hunting.
Did you always bring Buddy along on your trips?
Yeah, I took him just about everywhere I went. Well, he's my camp partner. And if I'm driving around looking for deer, you know, it's fun to have a little partner with.
Buddy.
Yeah, my buddy.
Your buddy. What was his, like, normal demeanor?
Just always calm and playful. Loved balls. He always had a ball. And I could go to the middle of nowhere, and if there was a ball there, that dog found it. He just, where did you find a ball? You know,
yeah.
This is great.
In August of 2015, Brian was on a trip in his motorhome. Just a man and his dog.
Got down. I was going bow hunting, and I got there the day before. I was having some trouble with my motorhome. It was vapor locking.
What is vapor locking?
I guess it would describe it like the fuel is kind of boiling before it goes into the engine, so it makes it chug and cough and lacks power.
Okay.
You know, it's messing around with that motorhome a little bit, and it was real hot. I was going to go hunting that afternoon.
Where was this exactly?
It was southern Utah along Highway 89.
Okay.
And it was down a little town called Hatch. I took my dog up the highway a ways, and there's a creek that comes out and goes under the highway, and it's called AC Creek, and it runs for a ways down the highway, and the top of this hill, there was a turnout area. It was a pretty good sized pull off area. And then there was a gate with the fence line that went and it would access you down. And then it got down to the bottom and you could drive right down to the creek. So I took my dog down there to let him swim and cool off. And I just grabbed a fishing pole and threw in here and there, you know, see if I catch any fish. But the day wasn't. It wasn't raining or stormy real bad or anything. There was quite a few puffy clouds with dark bottoms. But there was a lot of sunshine, too.
Yeah.
I could hear a big storm, you know, miles away, long, long ways away. It was probably clear down by Zion National Park, somewhere through there.
Unfortunately for Brian, the storm was closer than he thought.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul.
And I could hear the rumble, but it was a long, long ways off. And it sprinkled just a little bit on me while I was there with the dog, but nothing to really get you wet or, you know, make you run for cover. And after I let the dog swim and cool off, you know, jumped in the Jeep and started to drive out. I looked at my watch. I looked at the time. It was like 2:34.
Brian drove through the gate and had to get out of his Jeep to close it again.
I was getting out to close the gate, and I still had a hold of the door. I had it was a CJ5 Jeep with a soft top, and I had the windows off the doors. Mm. So all I had was just a half door. And I just got both feet on the ground. I still had my hand on the door, and I was facing the Jeep inside. And I seen the flash inside the Jeep, the reflection of the flash lightning on the dashboard and stuff. And at the same time, I felt like I got clubbed on the back of the head. And I mean, it was just powerful. It just like pushed me to the ground. And I can't say if I was immediately knocked out. I kind of think I wasn't. I think, I just went down. My first initial, when I seen that flash and felt the hit, for a second I thought somebody came back behind me and clubbed me.
In fact, Brian had been struck by lightning.
Once I was on the ground, I was laying over my arms, I was on top of my, I had to pull my arms out from under me, and I was just so weak. I had no body function. I was able to get my arms out and get to where I could lay my head on my arms, on my forearms. I was laying on my belly. I just didn't remember thinking I got hit by lightning. And then I just passed out. Mm-hmm. And then I woke up and I was wondering what the hell happened to me. And I was kind of confused. And I tried to yell for help and I couldn't even yell. I just barely could get the words out.
The paralysis Brian was experiencing is called Carreno paralysis, the loss of limb function after a lightning strike.
And I was so close to the highway. I was probably maybe 100 feet from the highway, but I was in a place where the brush was high and there was a downhill on the highway. So a car might be able to see my Jeep if they were going the right direction, but they probably wouldn't see me on the ground. And I thought I could crawl. And the only thing I was able to do was bend my right knee a little bit.
Mm.
And that was as far as I got. And so I tried to yell for help, and then I just passed back out. And I was just like paralyzed, and the pain was just intense.
This paralysis gave Brian a feeling of helplessness that he had never experienced before.
It was hard, as I've never been in that kind of situation that I couldn't do something. I've had times when my back has, slipped out or whatever and got, that pain down my legs, so I can hardly walk, and I've been able to get myself back home, fighting through the pain and pushing in the clutch and being able to drive and stuff. But there was there was absolutely nothing I could do to help myself.
Did you think you were going to die at any point?
Laying there, yeah, I guess I probably did. I wondered if it was done. I did, because I couldn't move. I couldn't go. I've never been in that situation. I've had broken bones and stuff and been able to get myself back, but there was nothing I could do to help myself at all. If I'd have been in a different place, if I'd have been down that hill, nobody would have ever found me. It could have been days or weeks.
Can you describe the pain? Was it just on your head? Was it all through your body?
No, it was everywhere. My bones, my joints felt like every joint hurt. Every joint was just aching. Mm-hmm. I had dislocated a hip and fractured two vertebrae and broke my foot in a motocross crash.
Oh.
And that was the worst pain I've ever experienced. And you could multiply that to reach this pain of lightning. I mean, it got to the point that my body just like shut off. I mean, I still hurt, but it was like I somehow was blocking it.
Yeah.
And then I would pass out again. And probably passing out from the pain. I don't know. The third time I woke up, I was laying there and I was like dreaming, and I was above myself. I was looking down and seeing myself laying there on the ground. My Jeep was there and I was laying on the ground by my Jeep.
Do you think that was a dream, or do you feel like that was you like dying?
I can't tell you either way. It was like a dream looking down. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had that view. And then my dog started licking my face like crazy. Mm-hmm. And I woke up. The dog woke me up licking me. He never licked me. He would give you one little tiny lick, mm-hmm. and that was it. He never, you know, really licked your face crazily.
Yeah.
One doctor that I had talked to months afterwards, you know, I told him the story, and he says, well, that dog saved your life. Mm-hmm. He says, with that dog licking your face, it gave you that stimulation to keep you there. And so when I woke up then, and he was just right there under the Jeep and was right against me, you know, I lifted my head up and all I could see was his hair of his chest. And I said, buddy, I need help. And I laid back down, and I woke up again, and I was on my back, and I could see somebody's legs, and somebody said to me, says, hang in there, there's an ambulance on its way. I didn't talk or anything. I kind of like couldn't. Then the next thing I remembered is the sheriff showed up. So this sheriff asked me if I could give him a number, a phone number to call or anything. And so I gave him my home phone number, and he called, he didn't get anybody, and he left a message. And the ambulance showed up, and they started cutting off my clothes. My socks were burned, so they just fell open, just sliced in the same path as the lightning burned on my feet.
Wild.
So they didn't even cut my socks. Their socks just fell.
They were already cut.
They were already cut. And I don't remember getting x-rayed, but they x-rayed me to see if I had broken bones and stuff. And after I got x-rayed, the x-ray tech, he come walking in to me and he pointed at me and he says, I know you. And I looked at him and I thought for a second. I go, yeah, I remember we went hunting one time and you had a blue Chevy pickup, but I couldn't remember his name.
Wow.
And he says, yeah. And then he told me his name and I said, oh yeah, okay.
Small world.
And then after that, I started to come out of it a little bit. You know, things, my mind started working a little better and stuff. And then the pain started just coming back more and more and more. And they gave me, you know, a lot of drugs for the pain, but it just didn't help. I guess it helped, but I just couldn't take it. It got pretty bad.
Meanwhile, Brian's wife finally got the message about what happened.
So the phone call that the sheriff made to your house, do you know who heard that first?
My wife. I was married then.
Mm-hmm. And how did she react to that news?
I don't know. I think I remember saying something that she, you know, once she heard that I was hit in the head, it's like she was wondering if there was brains coming out or something. I don't know.
I mean,
kind of overreacting, I guess.
I think I would ask that too. Well, I would ask, is he alive or dead? But
I talked to her while I was at the hospital and just told her that all my joints hurt. And it was like all the air around me hurt. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hurt everywhere. I can't think of any place it didn't hurt.
But you had all your brains.
Yeah.
While the pain was top of mind for Brian, the doctors were very concerned about what the lightning strike did to his organs.
The doctor that was on call that day over there, he came in and he was friends with Brady, the x-ray tech. Mm-hmm. And I had met him before too, because they were hunting together, you know, when I was hunting. So he came in but he told me that my heart was, had some really crazy numbers, and he would figure that I had a heart attack, but knowing that I was hit by lightning, he knows that's the reason for the crazy numbers. And he said, your kidney numbers are completely off the charts. They drugged me, and he says, we're just going to try and keep you comfortable for a while. Life flight's on its way. and we're going to send you to the University of Utah Burn Center. So while I'm waiting, it just, the pain was just growing and growing. It's like the more I woke up, the more I hurt. And I just started to cry. I couldn't stop crying. It hurt so bad.
Yeah.
And a nurse came in and held my hand and tried to comfort me. And she told me that she'll see if they can get a shot or something else to help. And so they gave me a shot of Demerol, I think. And then I kind of fell asleep and drifted in and out.
We'll be right back.
Brian was flown to the University of Utah Burn Center, though, surprisingly, most of his skin was fine.
Were the doctors surprised you lived?
A couple of them, yeah. One told me that I was lucky that I was sweaty. He said that that made it go around the outside more than taking all of it through the internals of my body. And which that kind of showed with my singed hair, you know.
Yeah.
No open wounds except my foot.
For even your head?
Well, I had a little bit of a spot on the top of my head, and then it burned a little track down the back of my hair, uh-huh. On the back of my head. All my body hair was singed down my arm. Yeah. All the hair on my arm it swirled in knots.
Weird.
My left foot was opened up like a 3/8 wide trench down from above my ankle to my little toe. Mm. And my boot had one hole in it coming out by the little toe. My left foot, I had two exits out my boot, one by the ankle and one by the little toe. And I had the same marking. But on my right foot, there wasn't an open visual wound.
Mm-hmm.
It showed up like a day later, started going black, and then the next day it was even more black.
Yeah, why? Do you know why it was black?
I guess it just killed, you know, the skin or something.
How long did it take to go back to normal?
A couple months. It just had a progressive darkness that came to it, and then it just looked all dead, and then it just started coming back, and the wound started healing up and scarring in, and my foot just started getting color back and looking right. And I had a bad enough burn on my ankle that I had to do some therapy and, you know, stretch it so I'd get my full mobility back in my ankle.
I just think of like stretching the skin.
Yeah,
is like,
basically what it was. Just stretching that new tissue. It was ugly how that foot went. It went just darker and darker, and it just looked like a dead foot.
Since Brian was in and out of consciousness as they took him to the hospital, he was unable to make arrangements for his car and, more importantly, Buddy.
So you go to the hospital. Obviously, you're not able to take care of your dog. What happened?
So I don't know exactly what they did with him at first, but apparently, the tow truck came and took my Jeep, and the tow truck company took my Buddy. So when I was at the hospital, the guy that I knew, Brady,
the hunting buddy / X-ray tech,
I asked him if he could be able to get my Jeep and take care of my dog,
you know,
'cause my dog was left there. And he says, yeah, I'll take care of it. I think they took the dog to the pounds, and then Brady had to go to the pound to get the dog, but I'm not positive. But he had him. My daughter went and got my cell phone out of my motorhome and broke into it. And then she stopped at Brady's house and got the dog.
Yeah.
She told me that when she got the dog and they were leaving, she said she was walking with Buddy, was with her, and then Buddy left and went back over to Brady and licked his hand, and then came back. So he was a pretty special dog. I mean, yeah. He did things that just blew my mind sometimes.
Brian was released from the hospital after 5 days, but it took much longer to get his strength back.
What was trying to walk for the first time like?
It was pretty slow. I used a walker. And my balance wasn't good, and I didn't have a lot of strength.
When did you start to get your strength back to normal?
Normal?
Or relatively so.
It was months. It was probably at least four months before I was really kind of mobile. I slept a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would sleep. I still do. It's kind of stuck me with sleeping. Like, it seems like I need 10 hours of sleep. My daughter is a nurse practitioner, and she went to school with a girl that went into pharmaceutical stuff, and they were developing a nerve drug. It was called Prialt. So they were talking, and the girl suggested that I get this Prialt injected into my spinal fluid. She said it would help me a ton with my nerve recovery and stuff. Couldn't get my insurance to do anything with it, and it was still experimental. And the gal actually comped the drug for me. And so I was having a hard time on stairs. And I had to use a handrail, and it was an effort to go up and down stairs. And just like within a couple days, maybe even the first day, even I felt better. But within 2 days, I was able to go up and down stairs without grabbing the handrail. It was that much of an improvement.
Do you know how much the drug would have cost if they didn't comp it?
I think she said that little vial was like $5,000.
Wow.
But even with that injection, he was still in a lot of pain.
When did that consistent pain stop?
It was probably a year before. You know, I took pain pills. I took the maximum dose of Dilaudid for a long time. One doctor looked at me like I was crazy that I was taking that much. And and he says that if someone took that, you know, just for the first time, took that much of a dosage, he said it would stop their heart, they'd die. It was a handful. It was like I was eating two hands full of pills every day.
Yeah. What was it like to come off of that much Dilaudid?
It was fine. I did, you know, on my own before they told me to. I just started taking a little less every couple of days and break a pill in half and just kept working down with it. Having issues with it at all.
Brian was and still is a power plant mechanic.
How long was it before you were able to return to work?
It was about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still kind of not totally ready yet, but my job position, they would have only guaranteed it for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I never talked to anyone. So when the 6 months came back around, I tried to get back to work. And when I got to work, they told me, well, you should have just took more time. We would have held it for you. Wish you could call this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was their rule, that they'll hold it for 6 months.
What was your first day back at work like?
It was all right. You know, a lot of questions from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little guy that used to be the symbol for the power plant called, for Utah Power and Light. It was a Ready Kilowatt Man. Mm-hmm. And he was made out of electricity, like bolts of electricity. So there was a few little posters of him with my head.
That's cute.
Yeah. Some people thought it was offensive, but I didn't take it that way. I normally worked rotation, 12-hour shifts. But when I got to work, they asked me if I wanted to just be on day shift for a while, you know, for just 8-hour days. So I stayed on day shift for about 2 months, I think. Then I could still do my therapy and stuff, you know, after work.
During those 6 months, you weren't being paid, correct?
I was being paid with our, it's a union job, so
okay,
you know, we had some union benefits that paid for probably a third of the wage.
As Brian would come to find out, the after effects of a lightning strike aren't just physical.
They told me that it's really common for depression with lightning strike victims, and mm-hmm. I do have some issues there.
Okay.
I can't say whether it's related to it or not. I don't know. I mean, I kind of was a little depressed when I got hit by lightning, actually, but I can't really say. Sometimes I can get like really a lot of anxiety and not be able to sleep.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The past year, it's been pretty bad where no sleep for the entire night and just get up and pace around and go for a walk and come back and try to sleep again.
Yeah.
I've been getting some drugs now to help with it and getting somewhere with it now.
What finally made you see a psychiatrist?
You know, going all night without sleeping for a couple of days, you know, and then you finally be able to sleep a little bit during the day. I just couldn't take it.
You know, yeah.
I called in sick one time, just telling me, you know, I didn't sleep all night long. I'm not coming in.
Yeah.
Know?
And especially if you're working with machines, it can be dangerous.
Yeah. And then there's sometimes you got to work on scaffolding and climb ladders and, you know,
yeah,
not normal ladders, straight up and down scaffold ladders, you know, so you don't have that little bit of an angle to it. It's just straight.
Did you ever see a therapist?
Yeah. That was part of my recovery. They sent me to a pain clinic, which is part of the University of Utah. So I went to the pain management there, and there was a psychologist. So I still go and see him a little bit.
Do you mind if I ask? I mean, you don't have to answer. You don't have to answer anything I ask you, but what sort of things do you talk about with your psychologist?
Just life things. Just, you know, daily struggles of life and how to deal with it a little bit. The main thing is it's just having somebody to talk to, you know.
Yeah.
I got divorced about 5 years ago. Well, that's been 5 years ago. So, you know, loneliness and stuff, you know, being alone in a big house. I got two dogs, and they're a golden retriever and a mix Labrador German short hair, so I have company with the dogs, but
yeah, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have friends that you talk to at all?
I just don't like to bother people. I feel like I'm a pain in the butt if I bug somebody with my problems.
Yeah, but wouldn't you listen to one of your friends talk about their problems?
Yes, I would.
So
I get it.
Yeah. I feel that way too a lot of like people have their own stuff going on. I don't want to make it all about me. But
yeah.
As they say, that's what friends are for.
Yeah, you're right.
After all the pain the lightning strike put him through, you'd think Brian would hate storms. But
I like to kind of go for a walk in a soft rainstorm, you know. This is not drenching you if it's just a sprinkle or something. And I don't rush for the house if I'm hearing thunder. And I'm more scared of it. I guess I'd say I respect it more, but I don't just panic and run inside. One time I was at work and we got off work and a bunch of the guys I work with on my crew, they were out there in the parking lot. Like four of them grouped around kind of talking. They're pretty close to where I was parked. And there were quite a few little clouds. It was almost like the same kind of day. A lot of little clouds with some dark bottoms. And there was a little bit of rumbling and thunder. And I walked over to them and looked up at the sky. Didn't say anything. And they all took off. Got in their cars and went home. And so I think they're more scared of it than I am.
Well, a healthy fear.
I mean, I definitely don't ever want to have it happen again. I'm not going to go walking around in a lightning storm. I'm going to stay inside.
Yeah.
I've had some people tell me, yeah, I got struck by lightning one time. And you did? And they go, yeah, I was sitting here and lightning hit this. And I'm like, well, I think if lightning directly hit you, it's left a mark.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah, it's much less severe if it's like
If it hits something that you're
and then jumps
in. Like one guy said, he was on the steps of his camp trailer and it hit the camp trailer. And I'm like, well, it didn't hit you. It had a path, you know. I don't say anything. It's just my thought. Like,
you're not as cool as I am.
Well, I just know the pain, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, if you didn't go to the hospital, you didn't get hit by lightning.
Right.
I mean, that's just it, period.
Like stolen lightning valor.
I did a lot of searching on my computer, you know, about lightning and stuff. And it's crazy. A lightning bolt can travel 10 miles and the voltage is, you know, they're not able to really measure it accurately, but they estimate it to be 50,000 to over 1 million volts of DC current.
I don't know what like a normal or what's a regular amount of volts.
So a good example would be a spark plug for a car. Mm-hmm. A spark plug has about 20,000, 18,000 volts.
Okay. And how many does the lightning have?
50,000 to over 1 million.
The lightning strike happened in 2015, and Buddy was already 12 years old.
No, I had him, about 2.5 years longer.
Mm-hmm.
He was about 14 and a half when he died.
Yeah, it's a good long life.
It's always so heartbreaking, you know, with a dog. It's almost like you don't want to get another one, but you get so much pleasure out of them. And,
yeah.
You know, unconditional love. You just, you pay for it all at once, you know?
Yeah.
To this day, Brian still doesn't know exactly who found him.
After I, you know, got recovered a bit and was able to drive and stuff, I went back down there. I know a guy that he's a judge and he's also a taxidermist.
Sure.
So I went and talked to him and I asked him if there was any way to find out who found me.
Yeah.
And he says, well, it's called the dispatch and we'll have him look in the records. So he called down there and they had a phone number that somebody that called in. And so I called that number and I got a fireman from Arizona. And talking to him, he said he was on a trip with another truckload of guys. So it was two trucks traveling together. He was in front.
The firefighter said there was a man in the road trying to flag someone down.
And he says, I had to either stop or hit him. And he pulled off and he took him over to me. And he said, then he called 911.
The man then left. The firefighter guessed the man was undocumented and didn't want to be involved with law enforcement. But he had no way to know for sure.
I don't know if the dog got out to the highway and got attention, and that's the reason the guy came to me.
Yeah.
Because he had to go out of his way. If he pulled off the highway and didn't really look around, he just noticed there's a Jeep parked there. He may not have seen me laying on the ground, and maybe the dog got attention and,
yeah,
you know, got him to me. I don't know.
I mean, and there's no way we can prove it one way or the other. So I'm going to choose to believe that Buddy ran out there and flagged someone down for you. I'm going to choose to believe he saved you.
I do too. One time we were camping and my friend had a pup, golden retriever, or a golden lab. He was about 6 or 8 months old and he had a Dutch oven and he had a welding glove, you know, to handle it and stuff. And that pup took off with the glove and he says, Bodie, get back here with that glove. And Buddy was sitting right next to me and I just whispered to him, I said, Buddy, go get the glove. And he got up and he walked over to that dog and he walked over to a real slow and got real close to his face and then gently grabbed the glove and took it out of his mouth and brought it to me.
Buddy's so smart.
So, you know, like I said, he's done things, quite a few things that just blew my mind. I didn't have any help arrive until that dog woke me up and I told him I needed help.
This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. You can follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at Live to Tell Podcast. If you enjoy today's episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. I'll see you in 2 weeks.